Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Here we are, rocking in a hurricane. Well, maybe a tropical depression. Well, more like the remnants. You know us Minnesotans. We love to talk about weather.
Oh, my God, do we?
Really weird thing. I mean, what was that tropical depression that came ashore in Louisiana?
I don't know, but I know that everybody in Iowa is freaking out about it.
But we've got the majority of the remnants. It went straight up the Mississippi Valley. Flash flood watches and warnings because a lot of rain's being dumped. And it's curved off into Wisconsin. And right now where we are, I don't know what it's doing in your neck of the woods, but it's kind of gray and drizzly here, which is good because maybe not so good because we have a cold front out to our west. You mix hot, moist air with a cold front. It usually means severe weather. Matter of fact, there's actually a town about 70 miles west of us that had a tornado warning for a while. Problem was the thunder cell wasn't moving anywhere. And if you look west along the Minnesota border, that cold front that's trying to push its way in is just training thunderstorms just straight up into Canada. And eventually, once the hurricane finishes its turn and goes wherever the hell it's going, that's all going to come our way. So we're talking for the next 24, 48 hours, nothing but rain. Maybe some severe, probably not, but just a lot of rain. So I had to spend most of the afternoon blowing up my inner tube. So I'm ready. Got my rubber ducky.
So you can float around the basement.
Yep. Rubber ducky, you're the one. Oh, it's downstairs. I can't squeeze it. So that's what I'm thinking.
Well, that's not here. What we're here to talk about.
No, this is not a podcast for weather.
We're here to talk about the draft.
We are. Ooh, it's drafty in here. Still got the AC going.
You, as a comic shop owner, you, as a comic book fan, will now be dealing with the fact that you are either in the East or the West if you want you some DC funny books.
No, I'll save it for freaking.
Because DC announced Friday that they are severing their relationship with Diamond. Now, Joe, why do people release news on Friday?
I don't know, so they don't have to answer a lot of questions about it and let the internet go insane.
It's well known in DC that it is called the Friday News Dump. And what it is, you dump your news on Friday, and this is even more prevalent in comic so-called news, because nobody covers news on Saturday. The Saturday paper is usually the smallest paper of the week, and the Sunday paper is usually already put to bed by Friday night. Now, on the internet, your news sites such as The Beat and Newsarama and the comic book CBC all of those, they don't put up news stories over the weekend because people aren't going to websites over the weekend. So this story gets dumped on Friday with very little information. DC sent it out to retailers with what they called a frequently asked questions. And I looked at it and it's like, those are none of the questions that retailers will be asking.
No, do you have it at hand? I mean, what were some of the questions?
I do not have it at hand, but I can certainly bring it up on the Strogtron 3000.
Well, I'm glad yours is working because mine's just kind of chugging away. Chug, chug, chug.
But the weird, I'm going to say that the weirdest thing about it is DC announced it. Diamond was taken by surprise because Diamond thought they were still in negotiations. So Diamond did not get a press release out with their side of the story until much later in the day. Marvel still hasn't said boo. And comic retailers spent the weekend on Facebook blowing up. And it's weird. There are some who are like, you know, screw Diamond. They're terrible. I hate them all. There were others like Chuck Rosanz. He was like, DC is trying to kill the comics industry. But it doesn't seem like there was anybody neutral. And Joe and I, when we were out hanging out, hitting comic shops on Sunday, we just kept having flashbacks to, what was it, 1995?
Funny you should mention that, because I am currently reading American Comic Book Chronicles, which is the books you and I rave about constantly from Tomorrow Publishing. And I'm reading the 90s. And, of course, I am just finished reading 95. And that's when, let's see, blah, 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 blah. Where was it? I'm trying to figure out the day. Because Marvel bought Heroes World in 94, the very tail end, with the idea that they were going to go exclusive. And everybody was waiting, waiting, waiting. And then it finally, the bomb hit. And by July 24th, DC, Image, Dark Horse, everybody went with Diamond Comics, which just left Capital with like TRS and Top Cow and Kitchen Sink and basically not enough. So by the end of, I think, did they last into 96, I think, but it wasn't a lot because they ended up selling out to Diamond, even though Cap did do a breach of contract settlement and they got it from Marvel DC, just was not enough to keep them going. And then what I didn't realize, and this also attributed to part of the chaos, was that apparently Heroes World just was not up to the task of taking care of all the accounts that they suddenly got to get Marvel Comics to. Stuff was shipped late, stuff was shipped out of order. And then instead of going to Cap City, which Cap said, hey, you know, we're willing to help you get going, they went to some other firm, which I never heard of. My guess would be it was probably somebody that Perlman knew. Not Hellboy Perlman, but Ron Perlman, who owned Marvel and basically just sucked it dry for money. And that, I'm trying to think back to those times because I don't recall missing any comics. I had an advantage, of course, because you know, there were at least two, maybe three other hot comics. So if I was missing something, I could get it from them to cover my subscribers. But I also know that when I got my books, I would have like 10 invoices in there. Now, with Cap City and Diamond, everything was on an invoice. I might get two invoices, you know, one was for reorders, one for regular stuff. But Heroes, I would get, like I said, 10 separate invoices. Now, if you've ever been in business, you know, one of the things you do is when you write a check to somebody else, you always put the invoice number on it. So I literally had to scribble down the back of the check all the invoice numbers that a single check would go for. They wanted me to send individual checks. At least that's my recollection. But I would just, you know, okay, this is covering these 10 invoices. And eventually it got to the point where my checks would disappear and I stopped sending checks at all. But I never, as far as I know, I never was missing anything. Although, as I've said before, my costs doubled. My headaches doubled because now I had to send stuff to Heroes World and send things not only to Diamond. And I stuck with Cap out of loyalty. If I couldn't get it, if the choice was Diamond or Cap, I bought it from Cap. Now, I did find my Hero World distribution application for credit dated 1/4/195. At this point in time, I was in business 2 years, 5 months. And I got a letter from Heroes World. Welcome to Heroes World. Your account application has been processed. We've established a line of credit, blah, 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 net 14, which was fine. And then I was looking at my Hero World orders. And what was interesting is it was all done online, and I had to send a disc in. And then, of course, I had my they would send me a backlist form. So it's like, here I've got my August 95 orders. Okay. I don't know why, for whatever reason, I have this. I literally have, let's see, 10 different sheets to order off. And what I would do is I'd order off the sheets, and they made copies, and I had to mail the copies in or fax them in. I'm thinking I faxed them because I've got, you know how fax paper, real fax paper, just fades over time?
Yes.
I have a bunch of that in my file. So they must have been things that I faxed. So, you know, you're just looking, and these are the different things, and they had everything. Here's the 2099 family, which was dying, Marvel Edge family, Marvel Hero family, X-Men family. And that was just, everything was according to the day it shipped. So, in other words, the first form was everything shipping in August. And that includes a bunch of stuff that they may or may not have shipped. The second form would be things shipping August 1st, 1995. And that included Spider-Man books, 4 Spider-Man books, 4 X-Men books, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 general entertainment books. I'm trying to see. Okay, then the next week. August 8th, 3, 2099 family, 1, Marvel Edge family. That was Daredevil at the time. What they had done, and when I'm reading through the American Comic Book Chronicles, is they had made everything its own family. So all they got rid of excess editors, and then the editors remained. You're in charge of the X books, which made it so that they would not everybody was kind of like their own little universe, much like DC was in the 50s and 60s. That's why you never really saw a lot of crossovers. That's why you never really saw Spider-Man guest starring over here, because they would keep – there was no reason to allow him in somebody else's Marvel Hero family, because if their books went up, that means you didn't get your bonus. It was just a really goofy situation. Now, this was a real headache for me because, I mean, now I had to go through and just figure out all sorts of different sheets of paper, whereas with Cap City Diamond, I just kind of went down and just ordered everything alphabetically. Now came the discount structure, and this is something that we've never talked about. I've always talked about how one of the reasons why I think this is a stupid idea for Marvel, DC, well, I'll blame DC now. What you're doing is you're making it as a retailer. Now I have twice the work, twice the cost, because now I got to pay shipping, not only from whomever you're buying DC from, but also from Diamond. And in my case, I had 3 times the cost because I was also ordering through Cal. But now my discount structure changes. When I ordered through one distributor, be it Diamond or Cap, you got a discount based on your overall order. And it was totally by volume. For example, I'm just pulling this out of Heroes World. And this is just for their thing. If I ordered $800 to $1,200 worth of stuff, I got 40% discount. If I ordered over $12,000 worth of stuff, it was 53%. Over $150,000, 57%. Now, when I ordered that through Cap City, it was pretty easy to get to, even with Diamond. But now you take Marvel out of the equation. Now you take DC out of the equation. The discount structure changed. And as Corey has talked about before, it wasn't that with DC remaining with Diamond that the discount changed. It's just now I had different terms with different publishers because Diamond was now a broker. They weren't a distributor. I was buying my books direct from DC, Image, Dark Horse. They could set their own terms. They could set their own discounts. What that did to me is that means now instead of getting everything at like a 50 to 55% discount off retail, I would suddenly be getting, well, I'm only getting 40% off DC. And I'm only getting 45% off Marvel. And then all the other publishers, and you're talking all the independent stuff, and there was a lot of independent stuff being published back then. Suddenly, the best I could get out of them was 35%. So the distributors changed the discount on the small guys in order to make up for the fact that they're missing a big chunk out of what they had. I ordered these guys because I had the clientele to do it, but I could see a shop deciding, you know what, I'm not going to order Bone anymore because I went from 50% to 35% and I'm not selling them any. Or maybe a new book like Cerebus. Well, Cerebus wasn't new, but say Paul Pope's THB or Tom Hart's Hutch Owens Working Hard. I'm only getting 30% on that. I'm not going to order this stuff. So it kind of killed the market. So now I'm doing triple the work for triple the cost, maybe even more so because I'm getting less of a discount. In 1995, that killed over 4,000 stores. They were already reeling because in 94, the comic market kind of collapsed because all the speculators went. They suddenly realized that, hey, I'm not going to be able to flip my Death of Superman or all my shiny chrome Valiants or Image books and make mega bucks right away. I'm digging for something else that was also weird with Heroes World. Heroes World had this incentive program, which was really weird because what they would do is like if you ordered every single Spider-Man book that came out, you would get 2% more off that line. If you ordered 7% more than what you did the previous month, you could get a 3% growth bonus. And if you ordered that plus merchandising, and at this time, remember, they owned Fleer, Skybox. I don't recall if they had bought Toy Box yet. They did buy Panini. You could get an extra 2%. So you get it was just a headache. You know, we've talked about – I really got to show you this stuff, Corey, because it's like, again, a full-line support bonus would be 2%. The criteria would be 75% more of combined Marvel and Malibu's full line, minimum 5 copies apiece. Oh, just a headache. And the thing was, is everybody had to do it because if you didn't carry Marvel Comics, and at the time, I believe American Comic Book said that they were still about 35, 40% of the market. Keep in mind, they were a lot higher earlier. I think, what were they? A couple years earlier, they were as high as, what, 60, 70%?
Yeah.
They were the frickin' titan. Remember, this is Jim Lee's X-Men, Jim Liefeld's X-Force, McFarlane's Spider-Man. I mean, they were the juggernaut.
Although, just a couple of years before that, DC was beating them because of all the Batman stuff. And they had John Byrne show up on Superman, and they had George Perez do Wonder Woman, and Frank Miller was doing stuff. So it was very much a back and forth thing. There are a couple of things that I want to add. First off, Heroes World was a small distributor in the Northeast. They basically handled, stores in New York, maybe up into Vermont and Maine and Massachusetts and up like that. And they had been around for a long time. If you go back to your 70s Marvel books, you'll see ads for the Heroes World catalog because they also carried all of the weird little Marvel licensed stuff, like the Hulk muscles and the Spider-Man car and everything. They were not made to become a nationwide distributor. And they had to gear up fast. I want to make this a parallel because now DC has gone to two retailers. Discount Comic Book Service and Midtown Comics in New York. Mm-hmm. And have basically told them, you are now distributors. And we don't know any of the details behind any of this stuff. But when DC changed their stuff with Diamond back in 94/95, there was a clause in that contract that for the first 10 years, if there were any problems with Diamond, DC could buy Diamond. Remember that. Because when DC started as national periodicals, they weren't just a publisher, they were also a distributor. Which is why in 1958, when American News went under and almost wiped out magazines and paperback books, which I've referred to hundreds of times, it feels like. Before that, Martin Goodman, who owned Marvel and, well, was Timely and all his magazines, including Lion Books, had started his own distribution called Atlas Distribution, which is why when you look at Timely/Marvel stuff in the 50s, it has Atlas on the cover. Atlas was the distributor. Everybody who worked there still called it Timely. All the people in comics still called it Timely. Atlas was the distribution. Well, he signed on with American News. American News went to him and said, hey, we want your girly mags. Oh, we'll take the comics too. Well, American News went under. National Periodicals was still distributing. They wanted the magazines, didn't care about the paperback books, could give less of a shit about it, and they could give less of a shit about the comics. So that's why through the late 50s into the mid-60s, Marvel could only have 8 comics. That was their distribution deal, 8 comics. And Marvel would push that. And sometimes they got caught, and sometimes they didn't. But that's why the Lion Books line. Gone. Just gone. It was done. Martin stuck with the magazines, and the magazines made most of the money until Marvel blew up in the mid-60s. And then Marvel was able to get their own distribution deal. They blew up in how many books they were publishing because their deal has always been publish as many books as the market will take to shove everybody else off the stands. Anybody who says that that's a new thing Marvel does needs to learn Marvel's history. They've always done that since the dawn of time. Matter of fact, grab a Marvel comic from 1975 when Goodman started Atlas Seaboard, and just take a look at the over 100 series that Marvel were publishing at that time with a single editor. And now you know why Roy Thomas left and Marv Wolfman left and Len Wein left and Archie Goodman. They would all become editor-in-chief and look at what was going on and go, oh my God, I can't. I just can't.
I got a trivia question for you, Corey.
Sure.
See if you remember. Now, we've talked a lot about X-Men number, my core X-Men number, and compared it to the other comics that have gone up. So when this all started, and I'm looking at my April 1995 Marvel Comics verse sheet. Guess how many Uncanny X-Men I was selling?
Now, was Uncanny your highest selling book?
Because
it was Uncanny and then the regular X-Men.
I don't have my DCs here. This is just Marvel.
No, I mean, which was selling better, Uncanny X-Men or Adjective List X-Men?
I don't have Adjective List.
Oh. Then I am going to guess 250.
Close. Actually, you know how many I sold?
How many?
Zero. And do you remember why?
Oh, that's right. They were in the middle of the Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah, sorry. That was an asshole question. But no, the equivalent book
I think it was Astonishing X-Men, right?
Astonishing X-Men, I believe, was Uncanny, and Amazing X-Men was just X-Men. But yeah, no, you're close. 175 each.
Okay.
And that does not include oh my God, these numbers were crazy. I mean, the lowest was Sabretooth Classics. I must have just ordered that for Steve Kempton, because he's the only guy who ordered everything. I ordered one. But pretty much everything was either 120 verse number 2, which I believe that covered all the non-mutant heroes, what was
that
happening.
That was the replacement for the quarterly X-Men book, X-Men Unlimited.
And yeah, so I mean that was a major league event. So just sorry, that threw a little trivia on at you.
But
you get a dime.
Thank you. So you had Marvel go to Heroes World and say you are now a national distributor.
And
because they bought them.
As I said earlier, we all know how that ended up.
Everybody else kind of went to Diamond over the next few months, and the comic market just died.
Yep. And there were bright spots. I mean, again, I
imagine if they would have done it and it wasn't Age of Apocalypse.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was.
Oh,
there,
man.
There was, let's see. Age of Apocalypse was big. We won't talk about the Spider-Clone saga because that just went on way, way too long.
But it sold.
And then, of course.
That's the thing everybody forgets. It sold.
And then the Crossing. Why did I buy an omnibus of that? DC was DC brought in Impulse. They had a bunch of crossovers. Preacher started.
What was the big Batman story?
I think they were wrapping up maybe they did already.
What's the issue number of Batman?
I'm looking here because I see there's Sovereign 7, Underworld crossover. Batman Forever came out, so that was big, but they don't really talk a lot. I think what had happened is in 95 or 94, they'd finished up the whole Azrael is Batman, yeah. And then they said the Batman numbers dropped.
Because then they probably did Contagion, and yeah, then where Gotham
did.
Got hit by an earthquake, and then yeah, you had No Man's Land.
I think the only thing they said was Robin got his own series. So, finally. John Byrne did Wonder Woman? Meh.
Yeah, no one cared. By then, Byrne had screwed himself so much, because he'd left DC in a huff, went to Marvel, left those series in a huff. And I remember by the time he came over to DC to do Wonder Woman, I said, oh, so he's going to leave. He's going to have Wonder Woman do something terrible and out of character and then leave right in the middle of that story too. Right? Right? Right?
Yep.
Instead, he went, by the way, I hate Roy Thomas and I'm going to undo everything he did.
Which is weird because I actually enjoyed the idea that it was Wonder Woman's mom that was the Golden Age Wonder Woman, even though she had already been written out of continuity.
Yeah.
So, although when you go
and
back,
never mind
in,
the fact
oh, sorry,
that
I can't
said in believe... interviews at the time, I don't like what Roy Thomas did with Earth 2, so I'm going to undo it all.
Yeah. So, but if you go back and you read that the original stuff, can you believe the Queen of the Amazons was a playing secretary? So, but we're wildly off topic, which is what we always do on this God podcast. So my attitude is, as you heard me bitching about in my mini rant at the beginning, this whole DC thing, for me, I think it's a bad idea. And we actually met up with a comic retailer who has given us permission to talk about his reaction to Diamond and this all going on. Now, for me, I view it as stupid because I lived through the Heroes World. I don't have the Diamond hate that so many people online seem to have. I don't understand why consumers have Diamond hate. But I do understand a little bit more why the retailers do. We'll talk more about this in the second half of the show, but when Corey and I were out geeking, we stopped by Mind's Eye Comic. And we lucked out because the owner, Eric Childs?
I think so.
He happened to be there. And we will mention this because he is the only minority-owned comic book store in Minnesota.
And one of the few in the nation.
So it was, and we've been going to, you know, we told him who we were. We told him we'd do a podcast. We asked if we could talk about it. He said it was cool. But we said, we've been coming here since the beginning, since he sold and he moved here. This is, I think, the first time we've actually saw him because we kept running into his employee, Melody. Was that her name?
Yes.
We got to write this stuff down. Anyways. Because we were talking and I said, okay, I was, you know, I had comics. I went through this. To me, it's deja vu all over again. I said, I don't understand the Diamond hate. And he says, well, here's part of what the problem is. Diamond has gotten really hardcore with their terms. They've always been rough on terms. Corey will attest to this when Christy got what was left of my comic store, because when it became hers, she had to cough up certified funds. I don't think I had to do that with Diamond because I was grandfathered in, because when we went through Cap City, and I don't recall if Pat and I had to do certified funds right away before we were granted 14-day terms, because when Hot Comics St. Paul account got swallowed up by Diamond, we got 14 days net. And as I was digging through my paperwork, I've got the account that went to Heroes World, and they just kind of mirrored what we got, 14 days net. When I did Crazy Comics, my first order had to be certified funds, and then I immediately applied for credit and was given, I just wanted COD check, because I didn't want to be one of the things I noticed with Hot Comics is that you'd have a really huge week and you'd have great sales and you'd pay the bills. And then 2 weeks later, when you had to pay for that great week, you had an anemic week. And so it always made your cash flow real iffy. So I figured I took a page quite bluntly out of the Sorcerer's Playbook. They just paid for it as they got it. So I asked for COD check so I could show up at UPS, pay with a check, and be good with it. And eventually I got it. Now, Eric was mentioning in Mind's Eye, he's had the store for how long now?
Let me take a look here.
It's been a while.
See, it was established in 98, and for 20 years, Andrew successfully operated Mind's Eye in Eagan before deciding to retire, so that would have been 2 years ago.
So he's had this thing for 2 years, and he's still fighting to get terms from Diamond. He related a story about Epic Comics, which if you go back and listen to our podcast, you know, we were really excited about it. Was that one of the stores we hit on Black Friday? No, he was gone by then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the trip we went out to go when we found Brian Messick's store out in Menominee, the founder of Hot Comics. Menominee. And he was gone within like 2-3 weeks, if not quicker, because one of the things was he could not get terms from Diamond. He could not get new comics from Diamond. Now, as you heard me shuffling through all this paperwork, I'm looking at some of the other distributors I dealt with. Midwest Sports Cards, who I bought a lot of stuff up in Fridley. I mean, here I got a case of Hot Wheels. I got cap containers. I've got slammers. They were hot then, you know. All sorts of things, you know. They took checks. Card World Distributors, they're not around anymore. Actually, neither of these are, I don't think. They were out of Northbrook, Illinois. I remember because the woman would call up every week, and after our, you know, comic store flirting, she would say, well, what do you need? And, of course, do you have magic cards? Oh, yes or no. But, I mean, I've got a couple invoices here where I ordered Lady Death cards, five boxes. I got Marvel Universe. This must have been a reorder. DC Master Series, Fallen Empires, X-Men Jumbos, no problem there. I've got Flare. We ordered direct from Flare, and they took checks. Heck, I got one from Penguin Books. We should mention Penguin because if you are a retailer, you can order DC graphic novels from them. I wonder if DC did that to avoid the whole monopoly thing.
I think it's more Diamond has been the distributor for graphic novels. And if they're going to pull their comics, why would they leave their graphic novels with them? Nope, we're going to go with a different company. I don't know if Penguin already has a relationship with Warner Books or not.
They might, and that might be a thing too, because Penguin order. Yeah, I could see them going a lot quicker into bigger chains and even smaller bookstores. You know, especially graphic novels. This is interesting because the books I ordered, these must have been all the novels that were coming out at that time. Spider-Man, Incredible Hulk, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Spider-Man Carnage, Spider-Man Fantastic Four, X-Men Avengers Gamma. So these must have been the trade paperback books that I ordered direct from these guys. But again, they set me up on terms right away. So I don't understand what it is with Diamond. What is the problem with setting up terms for a store? I know for a while when I had Hot Comics, there were always a question of, you know, why does Diamond would basically sell to anybody. If you and your buddy got together and want to call yourself a store and or meet their retail minimums, you could order stuff. There were a lot of people who were probably not retail stores that were able to get stuff wholesale direct from Diamond. And that, you know, again, for a guy like me who was dropping 10, 20 grand a week, that's a little annoying. But so maybe sometime during the time Diamond tightened sales, but it sounds like they might have gone almost the other direction. Whereas most distributors are willing to, oh, you've been around for a couple of years? Sure, yeah, you can write a check. Doesn't sound like Diamond is coughing up terms easier. And that, yeah, that'd keep legitimate stores going and keep, you know, just weekend warriors out. Even when I closed Crazy Comics, I referred to the guy. I said, well, what if I want to continue this as an online venture? And he said, well, the terms are different. So online ventures, they wanted you to order more, which is one of the reasons why I didn't want to do that, because it would be, I mean, I probably could have between you, Corey, Gruber, the Mikes, Kaiser, whoever, I probably could have ordered enough online to get enough, but it would have been a headache every month. Corey, can you order another $200 of stuff? I can't make my minimums. Forget about it. So yeah, there's something, I guess now I understand where a store owner like Eric would come from. If he's been in business for 2 years, traditionally most small businesses fail within a year. So he's doing something right to be around that long. And he's still not happy with the terms. So for him, he's like, go. You know, be gone, Diamond. I don't care. I'm happy to order something else. We also found out that apparently he does have the option of ordering either through Discount Comic Book Service or Midtown. I thought it was a, you know, you're trading one monopoly for another. So he can go. I imagine DC would probably sit on the terms fairly close. But, you know, he can set up there. I got a question for you, Corey, but again, it's going to wait till freaking gets going.
Well, one thing I want to point out, as angry as some shop owners are at Diamond, and, you know, well, this is a mess, they see breaking up Diamond's a good thing. You get the opposite from some shops like Mile High Comics. And Chuck Rosansky wrote an essay with his, you know, and we have a code, DC sucks, to get 50% off DC books. You know, great way for him to pump, pimp the store while doing it. But he said that he was at one point $1 million into Diamond. And he said that there are a lot of stores that owe Diamond money. And these are probably stores that have been around for a long time who, when they run into, you know, run into trouble ask Diamond if they could restructure like you did.
I did that a couple of times, yeah.
And Diamond allows that if you've been around for a while. So there's, it's almost like two extremes. There are people who Diamond must be broken up. And then there are others who Diamond is keeping the comic industry alive. And for me, what really bugs me is that the comic industry is so fragile that Diamond has to keep these shops going just to try and sell these books. Think about that. Mile High Comics, they are a mainstay. They are a shop that's been around forever. They used to buy ads in Marvel. You know, two-page spreads back in the 70s for selling back issues. And they were $1 million in debt to Diamond. There is a fundamental problem in the comics industry. And to me, DC is looking for a way to kind of extract themselves from that problem. There are all sorts of rumors.
Can understand that because you always want to grow other markets. But to me, you're also killing the fatted calf. The fact, you know, when they sell a graphic novel through Penguin Books, you can be damn sure those bookstores that get them are going to be able to return them. They're not going to sell them at the same amount of money that they sell things to the direct market. I suspect what's going on is that the AT&T guys are coming down the pike, and they're on record through Brian Hibbs as saying, we don't understand why we're still publishing these pamphlets. AT&T does not give a flying 2x4 whether or not DC Comics publishes comics, because they're more interested in Aquaman movie, Wonder Woman movie, Batman movie, CW, online content, maybe selling discs, maybe streaming.
The Apocalypse War animated that came out, I guarantee that made more than pretty much anything DC has published in the last year.
So I don't see DC ever
keep making money. Not? Okay, it's out on DVD now. Okay, when it's done selling on DVD, oh, we're going to have it on our streaming services. And then when it's done on that, oh, we're going to be able to sell it to other streaming services. Oh, and we'll be able to repurpose it across the world. And we'll be able to sell it to this cable station and this cable station. Or let's say they just keep it in the family. Cool, we can run it on Cartoon Network. We can run it on this. We can run it on this. We can run it on this. We can run it on HBO. It's free for us and free content. Again, I will point you to, there are, I would say, at least 20 cable channels that I have that only exist for one thing, and that's repurposing old content. MTV2 used to be where the videos are. Now it's where reruns of stuff that Viacom MTV created 10, 15 years ago that they can run them for free. VH1 Classic, same thing. You go there, it's Viacom movies and old Viacom TV series. It's a repurposing because, hey, we put it there, we're going to get the cable ad rate, and we get the cable carriage fee. Joe, let's say you had cable, and you've got VH1 Classic. You get your cable bill. It doesn't break out how much each of those channels are, but for VH1 Classic, you're paying about a quarter. So you got, let's say, 100 million people who have that cable package. That's $25 million a month for free content. They don't have to spend a penny on that content, except maybe residuals, if they haven't already petered out on residuals.
Now, unless you think I'm worried about DC, well, you can to a point, because they can also create graphic novels ad nauseum. DC's got a lot of stuff that they could print and reprint and reprint in graphic novels. I don't know. Again, what if they decide to totally do away with comic books? They could still do graphic novels. I don't know how creators would be paid. Would they be paid more in line like a writer would? Like, here's your advance to write the next Batman graphic novel. Would continuity matter? We've talked about that, how comics have changed from where it was an ongoing soap opera to now it seems to be in six-issue story hunks in order to write for the graphic novel. Could you imagine if DC did no weekly comic books and just did, okay, every quarter is a new graphic novel? That would so fundamentally change the comic industry. It may destroy comic shops as we know it. The comic shops that depend on the weekly influx of pamphlet buyers versus, like with graphic novels, like, yeah, I'll pick up that latest Tom King story, but I'll pick it up later.
Or maybe look at all the Black Label stuff, Joe. Black Label stuff isn't connected to continuity at all.
Yeah.
And that's where DC is throwing their muscle, their marketing muscle, to Black Label and to these pop-up imprints like Hill House Comics and the young adult books. That's where the marketing muscle's going.
Why? Corey, remind the people what is the number one best-selling graphic novel in the world.
Right now, best-selling graphic novel in the world is Dog Man.
And you do not find it in comic shops.
I saw it in two. Out of all the comic shops that you and I went to over our two road trips, I saw it in two.
Okay, which one?
I saw it in College Comic Book Knowledge, and I saw it in The Source.
And again, two more astute comic shops.
And they're huge. They're both massive. There are shops, you know, where if they don't have enough, you know, if they don't have enough shelf space, they're not going to take a chance on it because, well, I don't know. I haven't heard of it, and I haven't read it, and I know who Spider-Man is. There are all sorts of things going on at DC. More and more, we're hearing about how they're really going to push their digital first. They are looking more toward the book sales. There are tons of whispers going on. Even Brian Michael Bendis has said he can see the end of his Superman run, which started less than 2 years ago. Granted, he's already done more stories than John Byrne did when John Byrne took over Superman. But think about that. He was brought on with huge fanfare, and now it's okay. He's getting near the end. Much like other people, he might have had a 3-year contract or a 5-year contract. We don't know. And he usually writes ahead. But just think, if he had a 3-year contract, he started 2 years ago. That would mean next year is the end of his contract. We're going to see a lot of change over the next year. A lot of change. One thing that worries me is, you know, DC, they're now up to full speed with putting out their books. Marvel, nowhere near it. They've got 6 books coming out this week. No trade paperbacks, no hardcovers. And DC was the one who couldn't get their books printed for a while. There is also talk that while they're pulling the Walmart line from comic shops because it really didn't do well, they're looking to expand that Walmart line in Walmarts. And if you read those books, all of the stories are either 1 or 2 parters, or they're short stories that can be easily slapped into an anthology book and sold that way. Plus, half the book is reprints. How many times have we heard over the last 20 years that if they could put out reprints that sell as well as the new stuff, they wouldn't put out new stuff? Because they've got decades upon decades upon decades of inventory that they're just itching to repurpose. Joe, what is the thing we have been telling comic shops to do since day one?
Close and reinvent Pogs?
Diversify.
Oh, that's right.
Right now, if you are a shop that only sells comics, you should be worried. And you should be looking to reinvent your business. Your costs are about to go up. They just are. DCB Service and Midtown Comics are both looking for ways to cut their rates. I know I'm with DCB Service. Joe, you are too. There's a flat rate for shipping, and we get all our stuff FedEx. But if you're ordering from those, I know if you're ordering from DCB Service for your DC books, they're not paying you, you know, you're not paying for the boxes. You're not paying for the shipping, and you're paying for the shipping, but not the handling. And people are saying that the books show up in much better shape because they're packed the way they pack the stuff for you and I. Whereas Diamond just basically, okay, here's the printer's box, fill it up. What's Marvel going to be doing? What's Image going to be doing? What's IDW has been bleeding money for years. Dark Horse has found that their move into kind of the coffee table books for video games is what's keeping them alive. Where are we going to be a year from now? I remember back in the 80s, I said that the monthly periodical comic was a dinosaur. It reminded me of back when magazines would have... Okay, we're serializing the Tarzan novel, and then when it's done, we will put out the Tarzan novel as a book. No one does that anymore. If you mention that to somebody under the age of 50, they will look at you as if you are insane.
And it's something I've said for years. I don't know if I've said it on the podcast. I know I talked about it on our road trip. To me, it's mildly amazing. This hasn't happened in the comic industry before, because comics, mostly Marvel, mostly DC, have been owned by big corporations since I've been collecting. They were owned by Time Warner when I started in 78. And what was it, Candace Industries? They owned Marvel after they bought it from Goodman. These were big companies. And the fact that no bean counter up ahead came down to their level and started mucking around with it. You know, you got DC execs, well, not DC, but Time Warner execs. Jeez, I'm way out of it. AT&T, they're like, why are we publishing comic books? They don't understand why they should do it. We always hear from the prevailing wisdom out of Disney, as long as Marvel Comics makes money. Because there's a whole series of crap they were doing, and we covered it in our podcast. You know, this went out of business. This is out of print. Why is it? Well, they're making money. As long as every quarter they can show their bosses, hey, we brought in X amount of money, no one's going to bother them. Even though it hurts the comic industry to have, you know, of a 5-book set, they have 1, 3, and 4 in print and the other 2 out of print. And you know, maybe things have turned because we see Marvel's starting to reprint some of those old omnibuses. That's guaranteed money, because whoever buys them, they don't come back. And then we also see, we've talked about stuff going over at DC where stuff's going out of print and nobody knows why. You know, it's corporate culture coming down. Will comic books survive? Oh, hell yeah. Marvel, DC? Maybe not.
Well, Marvel and DC will survive, but what will they be publishing?
I don't know. Will your friendly neighborhood comic shop survive? Ain't no guarantees. Look what happened in 94, 95. First of all, you had the collapse of the comic market, which took out half the stores. And then you had this Heroes World debacle, which is being repeated kind of like by what DC's doing. Who knows? Maybe in a couple years from now, when Corey and Abby sitting back, you know, yeah, we're naysaying about this, but it turned out okay. I changed my mind on omnibuses. Or maybe we'll be going, well, if we're not reviewing previews anymore because, well, there's no previews to review. You know, somebody's going to be publishing comics. I mean, I got a whole pile of comics. You know, when the MCBA has their shows, they've got lots of people there that are having fun doing comic books. Who knows? Maybe we might be going. I mean, there's that line at Walmart. I've got it buried in my stuff. Actually, I got it buried, or is it right here? Here they are. Allegiance Comics. Red Rooster. Wait, isn't that what's his name from WWF?
Well, yes, that's
Futurist. Bass Reeves. Or is it Bass Reeves? And something I can't pronounce because Nora? Norris? I can barely read that logo. So yeah, I mean, that will they draw in people week after week, month after month? Well, we'll find out. Who knows, maybe in a couple years. I don't know. We should take bets on it. We should have a book somewhere, Corey. These were our predictions. Revisit it every year and go, hey, we were way off on this one, or oh boy, we hit the head on the nail on that one.
Speaking of getting hit on the head with a nail, you know who's never going to hit you on the head and always treat you nice, Joe?
Oh, these brownie bites I got from Archer Farms?
No! These guys, our sponsors! Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can just email me at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And if you have spare time, and God knows everybody used to have spare time, but now I don't even know. I don't know if any. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in the world.
He just doesn't know.
All I know is that we've got a bunch of other podcasts like these. The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about. Every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose Podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast. And he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. And if you think that I'm on all of these podcasts, you're wrong. because Scrabbling Across the West is at scrabbling.solitairerose.com, where musician Dave Coffell and his wife Stephanie travel across America and then sitting down to play Scrabble and talk about the day. That's at Scrabbling Across the West, scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, not where we have a contest to see how many brownie bites he can stuff in his mouth without choking. No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Oh, lots of stuff. We're going to probably talk about it in Freaking and Geeking, but Corey and I did a quick geek trip, kind of covering some shops that we didn't get in the previous one. And although we had the recorder, we didn't record. So you don't have to listen to us drone on and on and on.
Well, but, mostly because we had the window down all the time.
And oh,
when we
yeah.
record with the window down, people get an hour of this.
All I can say is what I bought, I've sorted through, and the stuff I decided not to keep, I put on the eBays and that. Some of the things that I've sold were kind of fun. I sold a series. Corey, have you ever picked up Super Maxi Pad Girl?
I have heard of it, but I never bought it.
No. It's some local creators. I'm trying to read the book here because Daniel Olson and AJ, I can't pronounce, Niehaus. And they have 5 issues so far, and it's deliriously funny. Basically, the gist of it is that the guy writes a story about a maxi pad that is a superhero. That's pretty much all you need to know. And I had the set. I read it. I loved it. But I, as you know, I'm just slowly moving things. So, but I couldn't believe how fast it sold on the eBays. As far as I know, these are still available. I think you can buy them at the source. I don't have the issues because, like I said, I sold them. But Google it, and maybe you can find these creators and buy them direct. Again, that may be the future of comics, buying stuff direct. You're not going to get the hundreds of thousands of sales that we used to get. But, you know, somebody's going to be publishing stuff. Speaking of other sales, let's see. Corey, is Puerto Rico an international country?
No, they're a U.S. They're part of the United States.
Well, apparently eBay thinks it is because I got all excited. I go, oh, look, an international sales guy. So I had a Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, Adam Hughes, Gwen Stacy variant. All you really need to know is Adam Hughes draws Gwen Stacy. So I thought, oh, it's going international. No, it's going to Puerto Rico. They're not international. Whee. So anyways, a couple other weird things. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure movie adaptation from 1989, which I believe was a General Mills promo. I don't know if you got it from the serial or what the deal was. Adventures of Kool-Aid Man, number 5. Which
is that one written by Mr. David A. Kraft?
I have no idea, but this was back when Archie was publishing it.
Oh, okay. Then probably and, not.
Let's see. It was for the grand opening of Wacky Warehouse, which no idea what that is. But Archie Goodwin was doing it. No. That's Archie. Good. That Archie series. Good. Never mind. Transformer Target, the IDW reprints of the UK line from 2007. And a bunch of other fun stuff. But I'm not going to tell you or bore you with what I put online because you got to go find it yourself. And you know how you do that. Well, first of all, you got to find me on eBay's Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. And there's links all over the place, you probably know. But when you get to the main page, there's a little box here that says sort. And all you have to do is go to newly listed, and you can see all the cool things that I just newly listed. And you, of course, as a beloved listener of this here show, if you see something you like, send me an email with an offer through eBay, of course, because then I can send one back. That's why I was kind of weird about that whole the Peter Parker, the Adam Hughes variant. Somebody had sent me a note saying, hey, would you take it sold it for $25. Some guy said, would you sell it for $20? And I go, yeah, sure. Sent them an offer. He never bought it. well, somebody in Puerto Rico did not mess around, and it's on their way. So there's only two things to say. KRAYZ, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No. Not where I take a honey bun and put it in my waffle iron to make it the greatest snack ever.
Honey bun!
No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Did you get any comic books from Discount Comic Book Service?
Yes, I did. I got my box last Thursday.
I have no comic books in my order. All I have are graphic novels and a previews, which is not going to ship in time for us to even talk about, much less use. I don't know. I got to send them a note because I went and I looked. I said, I should be getting something in the mail pretty soon. But all I have are trade paperbacks. I have no comics. And that's why I was curious because you said you got your order. What did you get?
Four omnibuses.
Hang on a second here. You have to edit this out because I want to get my order up.
Joe's got to get it up.
Okay, hang on. Let's see. Type in that. Put in the password. Swallow the little blue pill. All right. Let me go to my unshipped items.
Okay, here are the comics I got. Power okay. Fighting Forces number 1, 100-page giant. Flash, 100-page giant number 4. Catwoman, 80th anniversary, 100-pager. Ooh, and a cover by Frank Cho. Let's see. Green Dante, Green Virgil, which is the new Cerebus book. Wonder Woman, giant number 4. And Swamp Thing, giant number 4. I don't know if you count these as comics, but they are magazines, back issue number 120, and Alter Ego number 164.
All right, now let me just take a peek.
See if there were any. Nope, the rest are all books.
See, I got, I get back issues.
Ex Machina compilation one.
It's like everything. All I've got, all I've got are trade paperbacks and a previews. Which I might as well tell you guys, might as well stuff it, because if you're not shit, they don't even have mine up to ship. And I've literally got no comics in my order waiting to ship.
You don't buy much DC, though.
Just, I'm trying to find back issue. What back issue was it?
Number 120.
120. Good Lord, that must be even farther back. See, I should have 120 listed on my thing, but it's not. So I'm kind of like, what the hell is going on here? Have you just stopped shipping?
Maybe you need to be nicer to them.
Well, if they don't want my money, I'll go to Midtown.
Nah, just go
I to wonder Dunn. How many times that's going to happen, because that was something big in the 70s where if one distributor, if you screwed one distributor over, you could quit and go to another one because
yeah,
they
and
would.
That's what caused a lot of distributors to go under.
Yeah. Yeah. And they didn't care because they wanted a piece of the action no matter what. So, but I wonder how long that'll last. So anyways, that's what I'm mildly freaking on. I don't know if I'm going to buy a preview so we can do a preview show or what we're going to do, but we'll figure something out. What? How about you, Corey? What are you freaking on?
Everything.
Uh-oh. Hang on, I better take another pill.
Oh. So, okay. I broke my glasses, what, 3 weeks ago?
I couldn't tell. You weren't wearing them when we went geeking.
Yeah, they came in last week, but I couldn't go get them because I'm working too many hours and you have to put in advance and all this. Oh, and then, Tuesday night, it's like, I'm just going to cook something to eat, turn on the stove. Not enough gas to light anything. Not enough. Yeah, oven doesn't work. I thought, oh, great. I'm going to have to replace the oven. Nope. No natural gas coming into the house. Took them 3 days to get out here because everything's crazy. And they said, oh, it's the meter. The meter's broken. We can't measure the gas coming in, so no gas would come in. So they had to replace the meter. And they said, oh, and by the way, there's a problem with your hot water heater. Okay, I'll call the with the gas, I get free repair on anything natural that uses natural gas. He came out yesterday and said, nope, it's a goner. Thankfully, I will have hot water tomorrow, but for like 4 days, I couldn't cook anything. I haven't had hot water in the house now for a week. I haven't had glasses for 3 weeks. Finally, was able to pick those up tonight. I haven't been able to cut my hair since January. Both jobs are insane right now. And at the group home, we have one of the clients who it's been so long since her mother usually picks her up every 2-3 weeks to spend the weekend there. Well, because of COVID-19, she hasn't been able to do that. So the client is sneaking out in the middle of the night to sit by the mailbox outside starting at like 3 a.m. because she thinks her mom's going to come get her. So we have to check her every hour, all the time, and corral her back in the house. No, your mom's not coming to get you. Comic-wise, Marvel not shipping shit. Everybody else is pretty much going full steam ahead. Marvel? Nope. They, like 6 books came out last week. And I look for this week, only like 3 or 4 books coming out this week. No trade paperbacks, no hardcovers, no word on what's going on. When I got previews, I knew something was up because I think I told you, hey, they don't even mention DC in previews. It's not, preview DC has their own thing over here and here's their books. It's not, DC's been moved back to the non-premiere section because they're using other distributors. Nope, DC not mentioned at all. That came out Wednesday, and then Friday's when DC said we're not using Diamond anymore. So everything I'm reading.
So you're like, saying DC Comics is being treated like a raccoon by Diamond?
I'm saying that everything I'm reading
DC is Diamond's raccoon.
What I'm saying is it sounds like they were in negotiations.
Which they were.
Negotiations broke off.
Which they did.
And they were both kind of, oh yeah? Oh yeah? Well, wait till you see what we do next. And it might have been a game of chicken where nobody turned.
No.
Because Diamond was like, okay, you want to use other people? Fine, we're not putting you in previews. And DC went, oh, well, we don't have to print our catalog. It's available online. Oh, yeah? Well, we don't even have to mention it. Oh, yeah? Well, we're going to take our comics and go home. And I'm not going to get into politics too deep, but this has something to do with comics. If I the police wearing Punisher insignia. Joe, what was the first appearance of the Punisher?
Amazing Spider-Man 129, I believe.
And what was the story the Punisher showed up in?
What, didn't the Jackal hire him to go hunt down Gwen Stacy's killer?
Yes, the Jackal hired him to go kill Peter Parker. Even Gary Conway has said Punisher is a bad guy. Punisher is a vigilante. The Punisher is a psychotic. He's a serial killer. He doesn't care about serving and protecting or justice. It's revenge. The fact that cops are wearing the Punisher insignia, either they don't understand the character or they don't understand their job. Gary Conway, I wanted to bring this up earlier, Gary Conway has started reaching out to African-American and Black creators to say, hey, I'm putting together something to reclaim the Punisher skull symbol. And he's going to be paying for it out of his own pocket, putting it out. We don't have any details yet, but I am going to do everything I can to get Gary Conway in an interview to talk about it because every comic book creator who's worked on the Punisher, except for a couple, have said, Punisher's a serial killer. He's not a hero. He's not a good guy. He's a psychotic, crazy man. And for you to say he's your hero, it means that you are disturbed. Joe, what you geeking on?
We went geeking.
Yay!
Hey, we went down to Steve Brown, the man of renown, who's never without a frown, although he's kind of down. And he wasn't there, but that didn't stop us from despair because we went to Cedar Cliff Collectibles. And browse through their stuff. We maintained social distance. We kept our masks on. I bought a bunch of stuff that I put on eBay, so it was fine. But it was fun, you know, going down, looking around, see what they got. Had an interesting guy in there who was, God, I don't know if I could do him justice. Like, I'll give you $10 for this. Oh, I can't do it. Why don't you keep it? I'll have to keep my $10.
No, what he said was, okay, I'll do this and this if you give me this for $10. And the guy running the register said, no, I can't give that deep a discount. Well, I guess you're going to keep it on your shelf and you're not getting my $10.
I just remember we talked afterwards. It's like, I remember people would come in Hot Comics all the time. Hey, would you do this for that? And I would just take a direct quote out of Brian Messick. I'd say, no, it'd be like, no, I really can't because it screws up my accounting, but I do got sales coming, you know, a couple times a year and get you down for that. And you know, we always got the discount service so you could get it. And usually the people wouldn't because, you know, they were just there to, you know, well, you know, I want to do it now. It's like, well, you know, you don't walk into Target and go, hey, would you put this on sale for me now just for me? Even when I worked at Sears, you couldn't do that because I could tell you when it was coming up on sale. And I said, I could give you a call when it does. But, that used to drive Brian nuts. And it would always bemuse me. So I thought it was kind of funny.
It always bugged me in that people thought, you know, haggling is part of it.
At comic shows, I haggle.
At comic shows, yeah. But in a shop, it just always struck me as rude.
And it depends on how you do it. I mean, this guy was kind of a blowhard, you know, whatever. Watch him be one of our listeners.
But that's not worth it.
That's not worth it. Well, then why are you going to blow your $10 on it? Again, this must be, Steve must deal with this guy because I have a feeling, you know, you get a hang for people. You know how to deal with them. So if it was a guy who's been buying from Steve for years, maybe he can do it with Steve, or he can't do it. Or maybe Steve was there and said, get out of here. I ain't dealing with you. Oh, either way. Where'd we go after that?
We went to, that's when we ended up at, where did we go? Did we go?
Well, first we tried.
We went to Half Price Book. No, we went to, what was that, the Issues Needed.
Well, we did try to get to a couple stores up in Minneapolis that were near the riot zones. I can't think of the name. Heroic Goods. Heroic Goods and Games, but he was boarded up, didn't look like he was open. So we went back south into Apple Valley and we went to Issues Needed, which is really expanded. I mean, we remember going in there and you could ice skate across the floor and not hit anything. And now they are packed to the gills and a lot of good digging. I found me a set of First Comics E-Man, which I remember is laughing my ass off when I first read them. I hope they're that good. I also picked, if not, they're going to, you know where they go, eBay. And then I also have a run of the Marvel Star Trek, which it has one of my favorite covers of the Enterprise issue 3, where it's coming out at you. But we talked a little bit about that, and nothing. I probably wish I didn't spend $15 on that. Oh, and I got myself Youngblood X-Force crossover by Rob Liefeld. I hope's as good as I remember it, but for $3, I ain't holding my breath. Because that's one thing too, when I'm dragging myself through the American Comic Book Chronicles, is I start running across series like, I don't remember this series. Or you're like, oh, the Birth of Defiant Universe. I remember getting one of those books. I wonder what it goes for on eBay. Oh my God, it's going for $200 on eBay. I wonder what I did with mine. Or it's other things like, geez, did I read Dragon Lines from Heavy Hitters Epic Line? Probably not. But there are occasionally you'll run across things that I want to read. Like they're talking about the beginning of James Robinson's Starman, which I've had a hell of a time finding in any form. So we'll be looking for that. From Issues Needed, we went up to a Half Price Books. Bought a couple things there. And our last stop of the day was at Mind's Eye Comics, which we talked about at the beginning of the story. We got to talk to Eric. We talked with him quite a bit. We probably could have spent the rest of the day talking with the guy. Friendly guy. I just want to find his shop and give him another shout out here. Oops.
Mind's Eye.
That's not that. My M on my laptop is dying. Oh. So I got Mind's Eye Comic, which don't worry, there isn't one. But Mind's Eye is located at 200 East Travers, Suite 105 in Burnsville, Minnesota. MindsEyeComics.com. You can go to the Facebook page and tell him the Crazy Comics podcast sent him, because we told him we'd be talking him up. And I said, yeah, we've had nothing but good things to say about your store. Not ever since you owned it, and we didn't realize you were the owner. And then we went to Dairy Queen. My truck almost overheated, but it didn't, which is why it's not a freaking. But so that was kind of fun. Corey, I hope you can add some stuff on your end. A couple things I read. I did, with my last issue of the X-Files Conspiracy, read it. It was a series of one-shots interlinked from IDW in 2014, where the Lone Gunmen discover a conspiracy that tie into the Ghostbusters, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Transformers, and the Crow, and then, of course, gets solved in the second issue. Having read it, it was a lot of fun. It kind of makes you wish that you could do crossovers like that without having the lawyers drive everybody insane, because that would be a fun. Could you imagine those guys busting the Ghostbusters? Like, yeah, well, we're not sure you're real. I mentioned before, when we were geeking in our first thing, I bought a series called Cow.
Yes. How was that?
It was not about a cow. It was actually
false advertising.
1996 from Monster Pants. It was an anthology title where the publisher published short 1-4 page stories by fringe artists and writers who make up it was more an exposure type thing. There were gag strips, there were exercises and observation, stuff filled with irony or very dry wit. Nobody I've really ever heard of, although he does give a biography of where you can find these people. So it's kind of a deal where he just said, hey, if you're self-publishing and need some exposure, only 3 issues came out. So you can, if you can find it, well, I can tell you, I'm not keeping this, so it's going on eBay's. But it was a fun read just to sit down and be exposed to the different things. I didn't see anybody in there that made me go, oh, did you know such and such was here? But there was like a Michael T. Gilbert thing that struck me more as like, well, here's a page he did that he couldn't get published, so he just sent it into this guy to publish. So it is a fun little series for what I paid for it. And then, if I can find the write-up on it, I maybe, Corey, you can answer this for me. I read a series called The Torch. This was from both Marvel, but it also had the Dynamite Entertainment logo on it.
Yes, it was part of that crossover branding thing where Alex Ross did an Invaders story.
Yeah, because there were a couple.
He was working for Dynamite on their Project Superheroes, it was kind of cross-branded between the two of them.
Ah, and of course, there were variant covers that come with the Dynamite Forces Edition logo, signed editions, things like that. I picked this up. I'm not sure where I picked this up. A long time ago. This might have been a Black Friday pickup. Tells you how long it's been. But it's 8-issue series, deals with the Human Torch. And the Mad Thinker tries to figure out just what made an artificial man tick. So he basically tricks Toro into, well, I think Toro kind of stumbled on it, but, you know, Mad Thinker's never one to let a good idiot go to waste. But of course, we're not quite sure what the Thinker's true goals are. But for an 8-issue series, or if you can find the book, and you can find all of it because they're not terribly expensive, this was actually a fun read. I'm not sure where in continuity it goes, because the last I remember is that the Human Torch was depowered, running around in Heroes for Hire or something. But again, I'll have to look in Wikipedia to see if this is even considered continuity. This is its own series. And then, like Corey said, there was a Avengers Invader series, which I do recall reading, and I probably sold it because it was fun, but it was, you know, it's like, okay, I read it. I don't think I'll ever read it again. So, but yeah, these are definitely ones if you can hunt out. It was always a question, was I going to just read the miniseries or just go hunt down the book? And I would just figure, well, I'll read the series. And it was good. Definitely both these, well, all three of these series are, if we had to, in our, what would we say, beg, borrow, or ignore? I would definitely
borrow, or ignore.
I bought them, but I would definitely say borrow them if you can, or if you can pick up. If you see a cheap copy at half price books, pick them up and stuff. So the only other goofy thing I mentioned, or I don't know if I have mentioned, I did do my bidding. I did my bidding for my new work shift, and it pretty much close to what I had before. I have Sunday, Monday, Tuesdays off, and so we'll be able to continue our recording of this here podcast, and we'll always be a week behind. Someday. Oh, well, maybe when we get a Wikipedia page and America treats us like the national treasure we are.
Damn right.
That's what I'm geeking on. Corey, what you geeking on?
I hold in my hand a graphic novel that we talked about on the podcast a few months ago.
Ooh.
Paul is Dead.
Ooh, no spoilers. Tell me if he's dead. Well, he already said he's dead.
Well, Paulo Baron and Ernesto Carbonetti. And this is kind of a reimagining. You know, we've all heard the theory that Paul McCartney died in a car crash and was replaced by a duplicate named Billy Shears, blah, 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 and there were all these clues and everything. So this is, what if that story were true? It looks very European. It's almost watercolor paint, the way it looks. It's short. I actually wanted the story to be longer. I wanted more of it. It felt very compressed because there are some sequences. The opening sequence where the Beatles are told about Paul's death. I mean, there's this 4-page. How many pages is this? I got to look here. All right. It's.
I was told there wouldn't be math.
12 pages of John's reaction to hearing the news. That's beautifully put together. And the problem is, I wanted the rest of the book to have that room to breathe, but it's really, you know, it's kind of a short book. It's only, let's see here, $16.99. How many pages does it say? It does not say, but I thought that this was, you know, something that could have been expanded. Maybe they will in the future, but really highly recommended. By the time this episode drops, let me see. I need to know dates here. So today's the 9th, right? So
correct.
Carry the 4. Divide by 45. By the time this episode drops, New Japan Pro Wrestling will be back. They announced that they are coming back on the 15th, with a special show where they are not announcing the card ahead of time. Every match will be a surprise. Basically, you won't know who's wrestling who until the ring announcer says it. Then after that, they're starting the New Japan Cup. Normally, the winner of the New Japan Cup wrestles whoever the champion is at Wrestle Kingdom, which is, you know, their version of WrestleMania, which is right after New Year's. Nope. This year, whoever wins the New Japan Cup gets that title shot immediately afterward. So they are coming back with a vengeance. I'm excited. It's been 6 months since we've had any New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I'm happy that they're going to be back. In this big old stack of funny books was a Garth Ennis Hellblazer omnibus. I remember reading them when they came out, but I have not gone back and revisited them in a long, long time. And the Nancy Collins Swamp Thing, which I did not read because so many different people had come and gone from Swamp Thing, leaving stories half done or doing a piss poor job, that I just kind of, I think I've tapped out on Swamp Thing. But Nancy Collins is an author I like, and I read, you know, one of those things where it flew under the radar, and then when it was done, everybody was like, man, Nancy Collins was so great on Swamp Thing. Well, why didn't you say it when it was coming out? Oh. And it was nice to get comics showing up after, what, 2 months? And then the last thing I'm geeking on is one of the books that I picked up at a half-price book and magazine. They had the, you know, they have those PS art books, which whenever they're in previews, I always say it's stupid to buy them there because they're $60 reprints of public domain stuff. But if you go to Half Price Book and Magazine, they usually have them there for $12.99. So they had the final book of the Eerie series. Eerie was the first horror series. First issue came out in 1947. So that's like 4 years, no, 3 years before EC started doing horror books. And the last one takes them up to when EC started doing horror books. And it's also got a couple of one-shots in it. And it has a reprint of Eerie number one to kind of round out the book. And I'm reading through it. The art is very much low rent, late 40s, just get it out the door art. But the one-shot comic is almost a full graphic novel in that it's a 60-page story, 60-page horror story. And it's really, you know, it's crude, but it's really fun to see them trying stuff like that in the early days. There were a few books like that, the most famous of which has been reprinted a few times, is a book called It Rhymes with Lust. Joe, you may have even seen this talked about in Overstreet a few times. Do you know anything about the book It Rhymes with Lust?
It's a bust.
It Rhymes with Lust was actually published as a paperback book. It was the only one of its kind. It was from Avon Books, which also published comics. And it was drawn by, oh gosh. Can you look up who it was done by at Atomic Avenue while I
talk
about it? But it was published as a paperback book. They thought it would be the first line, first in a line of kind of the crime detective type fiction, except as comics, because, you know, magazines had become paperback books. They thought, oh, well, with comics, we could do the same thing. But it did very poorly. Matt Baker did the art. Matt Baker is known as a good girl artist. And the term good girl artist, most people say it is, oh, he's a good girl artist. No, he's a good girl artist.
Oh, my.
Which means he drew girls that people would go, oh, my. Dark Horse reprinted it a while back. That's where I got my copy.
And you can find one on eBay. It's not terribly expensive.
Yeah. But it was kind of a hybrid thing where they, you know, for all the talk of, oh, graphic novels were invented by Will Eisner in 1978. No, people were trying it beforehand. The first time graphic novel actually appeared on the cover of a comic was a DC book, Sinister House of Secret Love. When DC was doing the 25-cent oversized comics, you know, people went from 15 cents and then they went to 25 cents and then Marvel went back to 20 cents, but DC stayed at 25 cents with 48 pages. They did a few series. They did months of stuff, but they had series where they thought, oh, well, you know, Dark Shadow sells real well and these gothic romance novels do well, so maybe if we do gothic romance comics, they'll sell. They didn't. But that's the first time the phrase graphic novel was on the cover of a comic.
Dun, dun, dun.
So been reading through some of that, and that's really about it. It's been super busy, super crazy at both jobs. Today, over half the team was in training for some reason. We weren't told what they were training for, but it meant that normally 8 of us take calls. No, there were 4, and if anybody was on a break or at lunch, there was an hour where I was the only person taking calls. So I'm a little burned out. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us platter on about comic books for an hour and a half.
Hopefully you're not burned out.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Heard a guy at the beach yelling, help, shark, help. I just laughed. I knew that shark wouldn't help him. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!